ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 6, conversation between Narada and Vyasadeva, text 34. Etat jatura chittanam matra sparshachaya muhu bhavasindhu plavo dristo Hari Chaya Nuvarnanam Etad Jatura Chittanam Matra Sparshit Chaya Mahu Bhavasindhu Plavo Dristo Hari Chaya Nuvarnanam Tadhatura chittanam Matra sparsit chayamu Bhavasindhu plavo dristo Hari chayanu varnanam whose minds are always full of cares and anxieties. Matra, objects of sense enjoyment. Sprasha, senses. Ichchaya, by desires. Muhu, always. Bhavasindhu, the ocean of nescience. Plava, boat. Drishta, experienced. Hari Charya, activities of Hari, the personality of Godhead. Anuvarnanam, constant recitation. Translation. It is personally experienced by me that those who are always full of cares and anxieties due to desiring contact of the senses with their objects, can cross the ocean of nescience on a most suitable boat. The constant chanting of the transcendent activities of the personality of Godhead. Purport. The symptom of a living being is that he cannot remain silent even for some time. He must be doing something, thinking of something, or talking about something. Generally, the materialistic men think and discuss about subjects which satisfy their senses. But as these things are exercised under the influence of the external illusory energy, such sensual activities do not actually give them any satisfaction. On the contrary, they become full with cares and anxieties. This is called Maya, or what is not. That which cannot give them satisfaction is accepted as an object for satisfaction. So Narada Muni, by his personal experience, says that satisfaction for such frustrated beings engaged in sense gratification is to chant always the activities of the Lord. The point is that the subject matter only should be changed. No one can check the thinking activities of a living being, nor the feeling, willing, or working processes. But if one wants actual happiness, one must change the subject matter only. Instead of talking of the politics of a dying man, one might discuss the politics administered by the Lord himself. Instead of relishing activities of the cinema artists, one can turn his attention to the activities of the Lord with his eternal associates like the gopis and lakshmis. The almighty personality of Godhead, by his causeless mercy, descends on the earth and manifests activities almost on the line of the worldly men. But at the same time, extraordinarily, because he is almighty, he does so for the benefit of all conditioned souls, so that they can turn their attention to transcendence. By doing so, the conditioned soul will gradually be promoted to the transcendental position and easily cross the ocean of nescience, the source of all miseries. This is stated from personal experience by such an authority as Sri Narada Muni. And we can have the same experience also if we begin to follow in the footsteps of the great sage, the dearmost devotee of the Lord. Translation again. It is personally experienced by me that those who are always full of cares and anxieties due to desiring contact of the senses with their objects can cross the ocean of nescience on a most suitable boat. The constant chanting of the transcendental activities of the personality of Godhead. Om Agana Chirmanandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militang Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nithananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasani Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. And Narada Muni is giving you his realization, and he's showing you that bhakti is not some theological doctrine. It's not some religious dogma or belief. So many people today are afraid of that. Religious doctrine and dogma beliefs cause strife in the world. They're fairy tales that lead to violence.
Doctrine,
we should live our life
dogma beliefs
according to cause strife in the world.
Observation and reason.
They're fairy tales that
rather
lead to violence.
Take on.
Doctrine,
we should live our life
beliefs
according to
your life,
cause strife in the world.
Up being afraid of the dark at night. Why should your fear of the unknown lead you to construct these religious beliefs and take on these religious beliefs, which are just various mental constructions? Bhagavatam is giving you experience of the greatest persons. We're always reliant on someone's experience. and we take that as authoritative. So why not base your life upon the experiences of the most authoritative persons? Most authoritative persons does not mean they have economic power, political power, athletic power, entertaining power, or even scientific power, as scientific is ordinarily understood. The authoritativeness of Srimad Bhagavatam rests on the personal experience of the greatest personalities. So you have to look at your life and see how at every step it's dependent on someone's authoritativeness, someone's attempt to give you their experience. So therefore, the bhakti yogi evaluates, what are the qualifications, what are the characteristics of this person who I'm taking as an authority, who I'm taking their experience as an influence in my life. Then we compare. So this is very reasonable. We're not offering blind faith. We're offering shraddha, appreciation of bhakti and the bhakti yogis. And that appreciation leads to engagement in the bhakti process. In other words, a willingness to experiment. So it's not that we're just running around saying, oh, I believe. When are you going to believe? No. Our term, given by Rupa Goswami, is much more technical and profound. Shraddha. It loosely translates in English as faith. But that translation does not do shraddha justice. Shraddha can be just the tiniest bit of appreciation for anything in relation to Krishna. You know the famous example Prabhupada gave about book distribution. He was speaking in Melbourne, Australia. That if you approach someone with one of his books and they take it in their hand and just appreciate, well, this is nice. It looks very interesting. But not today. Just that appreciation alone is enough to give them a human form of life in the next birth. Because that appreciation, even though they didn't buy the book, of course we want them to buy the book, but even though they didn't buy the book, that attitude is shraddha. That I'm starting to appreciate Krishna. So all the paraphernalia of bhakti is like that. When the conditioned soul comes in contact with anything in relation to Krishna and expresses or feels some positive inclination, that is the beginning of shraddha, loosely translated as faith. So in other words, I hope you can see the difference. It's not that they have contacted some belief. Yeah, I want to believe that. No, they have had some experience, no matter how slight. There has been some movement of the head and the heart in terms of appreciation, in terms of a little bit of attraction. And that is a definitive experience. And then that shraddha in the association of devotees becomes strengthened. So we're not going around trying to ram a religious belief down people's throat. And in many parts of the world, people are afraid of that. Yet people want experience. And here, Narada Muni is giving you his personal experience. He's saying, itadhyatura chittanam. Matras Varshech Chayamuhu Bhavasindhu Pavodristo Hari Charya Nuvarnanam. It's personally experienced by me what the glories of Krishna can do. Now you might say, well, that's good for Narada Muni, but what about me? We are far distance away from Narada Muni's level. As even Prabhupada says in the purport, he's the dearmost devotee of the Lord. So we can push Narada Muni's experience far above us and say we'll never make it. Yet, we find also in the purport the statement that we can have the same experience also if we begin to follow in the footsteps of the great sage, the dearmost devotee of the Lord. This may take a lifetime to begin to realize. But so what? What else is your lifetime meant for? If we say to you, it'll take you a lifetime to rise from working in the mailroom of a corporation to the top level as CEO or CFO, everyone will say, well, that's okay. Yeah, it's worth it. Spend a lifetime rising up the corporate ladder. Fine, there's so many examples of that. As they used to say in the USA, anyone can become president. So people will readily appreciate your spending your life in that way. Uh-huh. So what if it took you 40 years to get to the top position of the corporation or to become some elected official? So what? But if you say, it will take me 40 years to realize I can have the same experience as Narada Muni. That's a long time. I don't know if I can hold out. And what's making us so impatient? Our conditioning in that we think we'll be missing out on crucial gratification of the senses. If I give up my material activities for a lifetime career of rising in bhakti, I don't know. I don't know if I can do that. At the same time, as we said, if we ask you, sacrifice your life for rising in the corporate ranks, or if your university professor taking your whole life to get tenure, to become established in such a way that it's very difficult to remove you. People will approve of that. So just see our bias. We are biased against transcendental experience because we think it takes too long. This is the nature of Kali Yuga, as predicted in the first chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Manda sumanda matayo. Everyone is very slow and lazy about spiritual affairs. Sometimes very quick about material affairs, but very slow about spiritual affairs. So we're always calculating, is it worth it to dedicate my whole life in this way? Do I have better things to do? So then we need some help in understanding clearly what happens when we engage in material activities. And we can never go over this with our intelligence enough. We need to understand what's going on in material existence. We need to understand the dynamics of material existence. Once, when Srila Prabhupada was making a very spicy, pungent statement about material life, material enjoyment, he explained that such statements are also kirtan. It's a very spicy, pungent statement. And it took, the devotees were taken aback, like, wow. But he explained, this is also Hari Kirtan. He said, there are two types of kirtan. What we normally would consider kirtan, chanting Hare Krishna, discussing the glories of Krishna, discussing Krishna's service. And he said, also, discussing the nature of the illusory energy and the futility of material endeavor. He said, that is also kirtan. And he added that unless our devotees hear both types of kirtan, they'll become weak and they'll go away. So therefore, when you're reading the Bhaktivedanta purports, you see so much insight into the dynamics of Maya, and grasping that information is crucial for your spiritual development. Because you can't just walk around in material existence like you're in la-la land, like there's some problems, but things will sort of work out, and I'll dedicate my life's energies in that way for material pursuits, and that's just the way it is. No, you need to understand what's going on. And Narada Muni is giving you clear insight. He's explaining, when you desire contact of the senses with their objects, matra sparsha, when you desire that, you're automatically taking on anxiety. So it's not that there are material activities and then there is anxiety. No, it's all one package. Material activities and anxiety are one package. So how are we going to train ourselves to see that? Because we've had lifetimes of conditioning, thinking that material activities are one thing and anxiety is another thing. In fact, because of the nature of Kali Yuga, we're so bewildered that we think material activity will relieve anxiety. This is how out of it we are. Instead of understanding that material activity brings anxiety, we think it will relieve anxiety. So in other words, we've got a lot of work to do. We haven't gotten to first base yet. So therefore, this information is so crucial. As soon as you engage your senses with the sense objects in the arena of the material energy, there must be problems, there must be anxiety. If you can change the influence of the energy that you're operating under, you can't stop your thinking, feeling, willing. You can't stop that. We hear that loud and clear in the purport. But you can change the umbrella that you're walking under. And then your life changes. But it's sometimes difficult, even for our own practitioners, our own devotees, to accept that hearing and chanting about Krishna has a practical effect and can solve all problems. Now, we're very eager to tell the whole world, the solution is hearing about Krishna. This will solve the economic strife, the political strife, the environmental destruction. We may announce that to the world, but what about our own life when the inevitable crises come, just like Arjuna had to deal with in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. When our own individual problems come, do we use those problems as a chance to increase attachment for Krishna's glories? Or do we go the other way and even diminish our spiritual activities while we cope with material necessities? By the testimony of Narada Muni, you can see that the most essential response to living in material nature is to take shelter of the glories of Krishna. Narada Muni is giving you his personal experience, and throughout this part of the Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing again and again, nothing will solve the world's problems except hearing and chanting about Krishna. So what Narada Muni talks about in an individual way, although he understands certainly that this is the solution for the whole world, Srila Prabhupada makes sure that you understand the universal scope and therapy of hearing and chanting about Krishna. Otherwise, we ourselves can take Krishna's glories for granted. It's my personal thing. It's the way my religion works. But in terms of the problems of the world, that's something else. To see to the root of all the problems can only be done by those who have the clarity brought about by hearing and chanting about Krishna. Then you get the experience that Narada Muni is talking about. You can begin to have that experience. So this point that as soon as you engage in material activities, you bring upon yourself anxiety. This point is also made by Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto. Where does your distress, your misery, your dukkha begin? It begins not even when you act for material affairs, but when you plan them. Just in the plan-making stage, you've got problems. But we think, well, there's the plan, and there's the action, executing the plan, and there may be a few impediments on the way. Just like you're driving around L.A. and you think you've avoided traffic. You're driving at a time when there shouldn't be a lot of traffic, but out of nowhere appears some road jam, some traffic delay. So we think life is like that. Use your intelligence, make good plans. There'll be a few impediments, but keep going. But Prahlad Maharaj points out, just in the plan-making stage, in the plan-making stage, that is where your anxiety and your problems begin, even before execution. So in other words, we've got to shift our whole existence in terms of not only execution, but also plan-making. We can't stop thinking. We can't stop feeling. We can't stop willing. So many people have this misunderstanding about spiritual life. Oh, you're telling me that we should just shut down our mind and senses. And then what? They don't understand the scope for dynamic sensual activity in Krishna consciousness. That's beyond the range of their ordinary analysis. As you can only go this far with your mental speculation, that thinking, feeling, and willing in the material world produces problems. That you can figure out. But what's beyond that, you can't figure out with your material intelligence. So therefore, people are afraid. What will happen to me if I stop thinking, feeling, and willing under the influence of the material energy? I know there are problems. I was talking to a mantra house full of guests last night. And I was telling them, first I asked, how many of you are between the ages of 18 and 35? Practically the whole room raised their hand. And I said, did you know that social scientists have described your generation as being the most anxiety-stricken generation in history? There has never been a generation more saturated with anxiety than your generation. You've got so many issues. You've got so many worries. It's doubtful that you're going to make more money or have more economic success than your parents. And, of course, that's a violation of the American dream. It's always been assured that things will get better and better with each generation. You're going to make more money. You're going to have a bigger house, more cars than your parents. That's just the way things work. But it's not happening. So I went down the whole list of anxieties. They're studying at the university. How do you know that what you're studying will be a viable, practical career that's not old-fashioned 5 years from now? And they all nodded their heads. Yeah. How do you know? You're paying so much money, you're taking on so much debt. How do you know a machine won't take your job in 5 years? And what about the debts themselves? Your university debts. You've got to pay that back. And meanwhile, relationships are such an issue. Due to the hookup culture, people can't even have a material relationship anymore without being in complete anxiety. So they could appreciate that. But then you have to make the connection from the illusory affairs to the positive spiritual affairs. And then people start thinking, wait a minute, are you handing me some religious belief? That I'm supposed to believe in certain concepts and then I'll be saved. No, we are giving what I call applied spiritual technology. There's the wisdom, vijnana, and then the application of that wisdom, vijnana. So as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, jnana vijnana chittatma kutasto vijitendriya. Because the devotee is equipped with both wisdom and the experience from applying that wisdom, therefore, chittatma, the atma is chitta, satisfied, and you can, vijitendriya, conquer your senses. So people are relieved to hear that. Of course, in the USA, there's still some claim for believing in God and being theistic. It's not in all parts of the first world. Just like recently I did a program in a city in New Zealand. Christchurch is the name of the city. That's about as much to do with Christ as the whole city has. This is the name. So it was a new temple constructed because of the earthquake a few years ago. So the temple is new. And there was not yet a sign in front. The devotees hadn't put up a proper sign. For whatever reasons the management had, financial reasons, so on and so forth. Unfortunately, it turned out to be an advantage for having a program there. Because the place loaded up with guests, invited to a program about happiness, and they didn't think that they were going to some kind of religious place. I know because I was taking my evening walk outside the temple, and I saw people approaching on the street. And they come up to me, "Can you tell us where that monk is going to speak?" And they were right. They were right basically in front of the temple. So I said, "Oh, it's right here." "Oh, okay." But there was no sign that would tip them off that this is going to be something like religion. So it was a big crowd. The temple president was very happy. "Wow, we've got a place full of young persons. They've all come to hear." So I gave a talk. You see, the new temple has not only a temple room, but it has like an assembly hall. So we had the program in the assembly hall. So there was no altar, there was no vyasasan. So the people, again, they didn't think they were in a religious atmosphere. After I gave my talk, at least 10 persons came up to me. Said, "This is really great. Really, I really resonate with what you said. One thing that really makes me feel so good is this is not a religion." One after another, they're all saying the same thing. "Yeah, it's really great that this is not a religion." And then I talked to some of the devotee staff at the program. And they said the same thing. So many persons came up to them and said, "This is really great. The food, the music, the mantra. I'm so glad this is not a religion." The U.S. isn't so as bad as this. Still, people have this fear that, especially young persons, because amongst young people in the USA now, religion is fading. The main thing that's going on, the biggest religion that is expanding amongst young people in the USA is no religion. Just don't worry about it. Don't think about it. It's just not relevant. I'm not against. I'm not for. I mean, it's just like
You're asking me to think about the pink elephant. So this new tendency is called apatheism, combination of apathy and theism. It's not that I'm an atheist. And many atheistic philosophers are complaining. Why aren't people making that jump to atheism? They should think about it. They should be deliberating and realize atheism is the way. But the apatheist, the apathetic persons, they don't even want to do the thinking about whether to be an atheist, be a theist. It's just irrelevant. Let me just get on with my life. I got to pay back my college loans, you know. I've got to try to have a relationship that lasts for more than 2 weeks. You know? I got to find a place to live. I'm tired of staying with my parents, but I can't afford my own place. That's what's on their mind. What's going on in the world politically? What's going on in the world economically? Environmentally? It's crazy. And you want me to think about religion? No, I got nothing against it, nothing for it. Apatheism. That's what's going on amongst the younger ones. So, how to give them a taste of the dynamic processes of bhakti? This temple here is offering experience. I was just thinking that today, looking at the gorgeous dress of the deities, the kirtan, the whole package is offering experience for the senses. Sometimes even our own devotees forget that. They kind of trudge through the whole temple program mechanically, without heart investment. We're getting a chance to walk the path of Narada Muni. And therefore Prabhupada is insisting you can have the same experience. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's talking to Arjuna, personally rescuing Arjuna from depression, confusion, indecision. So the acharyas insist you can have the same experience that Arjuna had just by properly reading Bhagavad Gita. Now, that just sounds far off for us. I pick up Bhagavad Gita, start reading it, I'm getting the same experience as Arjuna? Yes, that potential is there. It may take us some time to start glimpsing that potential, but it's there. And what else is life meant for than to have this scientific experience of bhakti? Therefore, the experience that Narada Muni is describing is so important. And that's why it occupies such a major role in the first canto. By tapping into Narada Muni's experience, you can see the whole process of bhakti developing. It shows us the deepest potential. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur describing his spiritual experiences in his household life at his home. In the song, Shuddha Bhakata Charanarenu. He's describing how he's performing arti in his house. And he sees the whole house transform into Goloka Vrindavan. So you would say, well, that's light years beyond anything we can experience. He's showing you the peak potential. And even just a glimpse of that peak potential is the greatest luxury, the greatest wealth in the world. So we need to see what the goal is and make progress towards it. And that's why Narada Muni is describing his personal experience. It's personally experienced by me that even though you could be always full of anxieties because you're contacting the senses with the sense objects, you can cross the ocean of that nescience on the most suitable boat. The constant chanting of the transcendental activities of the personality of Godhead. Any questions? Thank you. Yes.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. Thank you very much for your vibrant class. You were speaking about, or mentioned, and I think it came from the verse, Adoshrata Tathata Sangha Bhajana Kriya. In the ninth chapter and the third verse of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport that faith comes from association of devotees. So, in one sense, it's we have faith first, but then yet faith comes from association of devotees. So could you clarify all this, please?
Yes, this is why it is inaccurate and highly unjust for people to say that there can't be a God because there's such evil in the world. They neglect to see, they don't understand because of ignorance, that Krishna has put devotees everywhere, not simply Narada Muni, but Narada Muni's representatives, so that people can have contact with the devotee and begin their Shraddha and deepen it. So yes, when just like book distribution, the person is being approached by a devotee. The person takes the book, appreciates, even though it doesn't buy the book, gives the book back. Still, that appreciation leads to more contact with devotees. The Super Soul arranges that. You appreciated. You didn't buy the book. You appreciated, at least on this first encounter with a devotee. Next time you meet a devotee, you can go deeper. So the association with devotees gives the Shraddha and deepens the Shraddha. Sometimes even our own devotees, as they go through their years in bhakti, forget about the necessity of associating with inspiring devotees. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur explains that when you let go of the active need to associate with devotees, gradually you lose the ability to distinguish between material and spiritual affairs. Very deep statement. Something that, unfortunately, we see can happen. It all becomes a jumble. What is material? What is spiritual? Hey, I'm living a spiritual life. I still believe in Krishna. You know. What more do you want out of me? Everything becomes foggy and fuzzy. So easily in this day and age, because we have given up the need to associate with devotees who are pushing forward. And that's an essential principle given by Rupa Goswami in Nectar Devotion, to associate with devotees who are pushing ahead. Then you also feel the need to push ahead. Without that association, it's not only that you lose the urge to push ahead, but you also start to get disorientated. And you just think, I'm a religious person. What I'm doing is kind of all spiritual in its own way. You become a Californian, you know? Anything else? All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Voice pro. Hare.